This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
Listening to In Depth, exploring issues that affect you with newsmakers from around British Columbia.
I'm Vancouver Sun and Province columnist Dan Fumano, and we're here today with my colleague Joanne Lee Young, who covers real estate for the Vancouver Sun and Province. Joanne, can you tell us about this recent story? Why all the hubbub about a bakery?
Sure. This is a bakery on a corner on the west side of Vancouver. It's at 33rd and Mackenzie. And I was drawn to it because it seems to be a point where, obsession in the city about real estate development and how much we need it in terms of increasing density and affordability is hitting people's desire to hold on to a sense of belonging in their communities. And so ground zero for all of this is a bakery called Bigsby, the Bakehouse. And it sits in the middle of a low slung building with, seven or eight storefronts that go back to being around since the 1930s. And for decades, one company owned this parcel of land. And in 2015, it was sold to a numbered company for $5.5 million. And then 4 months later, it was sold again for $6.5 million. So in a very short time, it kind of became this like a little spot of speculation on the idea that more density could be added to this spot. Developer started to talk about plans for condos on top and retail stores below. And this sparked in the community a concern that they would lose Bigsby. And so then you had the two sides facing off with each other. And right now the result is that the bakery is still there. The developer has been unable to move forward with its plans. And so there's a bit of a limbo that's interesting to look at.
And what seems kind of interesting is that it's not so much, I mean, we've obviously seen lots of cases over the, going back lots and lots of years, but definitely in recent years, of neighborhood opposition to new kind of real estate development, mm-hmm. especially if it's over the scale of something or saying something's out of place, mm-hmm. But in this case, the opposition isn't really based around that. It sounds like it's the developers aren't trying to put in, a huge condo tower there. No. It's actually a relatively modest, three story with retail on the ground floor.
Retail on the bottom.
And so people aren't really, it seems like, opposing the development itself. What they're afraid of is losing these businesses in the meantime that would...
That's right. And in fact, the residents and the owner of the bakery, they all say we're not against adding density. This is a relatively... it would have been adding quite gentle density in an area of single-family homes at a time when there's really a broader conversation about adding much more density into these areas. So for that reason, it's really unique.
And it comes fairly soon after, within a couple of years of just Kitty Corner, a similar lot was redeveloped into the same kind of thing that these developers want to do, retail on the ground floor, two stories of condos above, maybe some townhouses.
Yeah, that's right.
It's kind of similar.
I tried to speak to the numbered company, the developer, the would-be developer, and they declined to speak, but I was able to speak to their real estate agent. And she said that it was reasonable for them to expect they could build something like that because Kitty Corner, that owner had been able to get that level of, FSR or density.
Without a huge community opposition.
No.
People or backlash since the fact I don't think people in the community are upset about that density that was added on that particular site, which was just across the street.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's timing. I think the timing of when this happened, there was, if you recall, like going back to 2015, there was, you know, the chatter was all about speculative buying and the idea that I think people started to wonder about changing their neighborhoods because of this. And so it actually led to the forming of the McKenzie Heights Community Association. Residents just kind of got together and in an ad hoc way tried to figure out what they could do. They started to write letters. They started to band together. And at the same time, the developer, I mean, they were eager to talk to the public, and they went through 2 years of consultations. They revised their plans. They made, instead of having larger storefronts, right, they made for kind of smaller ones, only 16 feet wide. And they, you know, they said, well, we'll have townhomes that are ground level access. Yeah. You know, the talk was about something that would be appealing to the community. But after all that, it's still, I spoke to the architect who told me that City Hall said to them that probably this wouldn't go through. And because of, you know, getting that kind of vibe from City Hall made them not hand in a rezoning application. City Hall has said to me on the record that they never received a rezoning application.
Yeah.
And so there's a bit of a, it's a bit of a limbo situation. City Hall is trying to balance these two forces, between listening to communities and also what to do about a situation where developers would like some clarity on what can be built in the future based on what's happened in the very recent past.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's writ large across the city. We've seen this in Chinatown.
Yeah.
We've seen, zoning, what we call down zoning.
Yeah.
You know, zoning for less density or sort of a halt on that because of concerns in the community about, what we call legacy businesses.
Yeah. So you can tell us about this, about legacy businesses. I mean, you report that the city is studying ways to try to protect. I mean, at the end, what this story is really about is about the value that communities place on these independent businesses, local, small businesses,
yeah,
whether it's a bakery in this case, it could be a beloved coffee shop or a barbershop, or the benefits these businesses provide to the community beyond just selling goods or providing services. It's a kind of intangible community benefit.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me because really this area of McKenzie Heights on the west side and then Chinatown, they really have very little in common, except that in Chinatown, what we saw was a desire for businesses that have a connection to the history of Chinatown, you know, as a working class place, a place for low-income seniors who want to access businesses that speak their language. And so the uproar over 105 Kiefer and zoning in general,
yeah,
for more development in Chinatown really hit up against this idea that it would prevent these businesses that have a connection to the history of a place from being able to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that same way, it's the situation in McKenzie Heights, which is a very different community. But I think when I spoke to the residents, they love this bakery,
yeah,
because, people were telling me about how they would go in and the co-owner would hand them a pie,
yeah,
and say, bring me back the dish,
yeah,
after you're done. Or, one customer, she grows a lot of tomatoes, and she came in with 20 pounds of tomatoes and traded it for,
yeah,
some bread. Or another woman says she, calls ahead and books like 3 or 4 loaves of bread a week. It's become a place where, it reflects the values in a community where residents feel like they were losing that, as the context of it would be, more conversations about empty houses,
yeah,
not knowing your neighbors, not being able to connect in that way. And so it's that same thing, like somehow you know, a small little bakery has come to represent all these things that people want to hold on to.
Yeah.
It's their way of belonging in Mackenzie Heights, in the same way that low-income seniors and, you know, have for quite a long time in Vancouver felt a sense of belonging in Chinatown because those businesses exist.
Yeah. Which was then jeopardized by a sudden influx of these big developments.
Yeah.
And other pressures in the area. I mean, I thought one anecdote or one quote that was in your story that I thought was really telling was the owner of the bakery saying that the bakery was the kind of place that parents could send their kids, like, you know, the first time a kid is going out on their own to do an errand or buy something.
Right.
It was the kind of place that parents could feel safe and comfortable knowing who was on the other end of that trip, give the kid a couple of toonies and say, hey, can you go grab a loaf of bread?
Right.
And bring it back. That they were that kind of place and they wanted to be that kind of place.
Yeah.
But what's interesting too is when we talk about legacy businesses, so the city has looked at examples in other cities like San Francisco, which is having similar kinds of pressures between soaring land values, huge development pressures, and people worrying about the erosion of that kind of neighborhood community feeling and, you know, displacement. It's a lot of similar pressures. Mm-hmm. So Vancouver's looking at San Francisco's example, what they can do to help legacy businesses survive as the city changes so rapidly around them.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us much about this, like about what kinds of businesses would they be looking at? Is it just purely, when they say legacy business, is it just how old a business is? Or, because you also wrote a bit about that.
I wrote about that. And the whole program was really sparked by what the city started to look at this based on what was happening in Chinatown. And I think it's really very nascent. They've just started to look at this. They're looking at examples in San Francisco, Seattle. And in those cities, age has really been a way to determine whether or not a business qualifies.
Sure.
But in Vancouver, they're already finding that might not necessarily work because a business could exist for many years, but not tick the boxes that we just spoke about that sense of belonging or, you know, what an area represents to the people who live there. And so I think that the folks at City Hall who are looking into this are looking at these other cities, but then trying to see what would actually work in Vancouver. Bixby hasn't been around it's been around for 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, in Chinatown, one of the examples that people have been pointing out is Chinatown Barbecue, which is a new restaurant.
Yeah.
But it has worked hard to kind of, you know, hit a certain price point, have certain employees work there that hit on the values that people want to preserve rather than just go by age. So it'll be interesting how the city identifies these, you know, who gets to decide. And then also what actually can be done. I mean, the thing at Bixby is that it's really the process of developing this that would possibly kill it. It's
right.
The communities are saying there's so much value in these businesses, yet they seem so fragile. They couldn't really even withstand closing for 6 months or 12 months if there
or
was
finding
to be
a new location,
or finding a new location. Like they're, and legacy programs elsewhere have really been about grants, right? Like you give a business a grant, but those run out quickly.
We were just looking at the example in New York where I guess City Hall is trying to offer grants to small businesses, bodegas and small neighborhood shops. They're grants sort of that so the businesses can survive as the neighborhoods change really quickly around them and gentrify. Mm-hmm. But these are grants for like capital improvements, like getting a new awning, like spiffing up your storefront. I don't know if that would, something like that in Vancouver, if it would do enough to save a business.
Yeah. At Bixby, you know, they would have to cover wages for staff.
Yeah.
I mean, that money would be eaten up pretty quickly. There is some talk when I kind of went through the legacy business program notes. There's some talk of, you know, establishing like a special economic zone whereby, you know, for example, in Chinatown, then certain businesses could qualify to be there. And then I guess you have it's not just a one-off grant, but the businesses that get to exist in that zone receive other benefits.
And, like a reduced property tax?
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's within the realm of, you know, a city. So it's a big, it's a big question. I can see why it's taking a while to, you know, identify what businesses qualify and then what to do about them.
Because, like, you look at the example of Granville Island, which, you know, is heralded across the country and beyond as this wonderful, unique, vibrant place with all these unique businesses. And as I understand it, like, chain businesses are not allowed to operate there. Right. It's kind of a unique thing because all the land is owned by the federal government, I think, for the retail part of Granville Island. And so it's owned by CMHC. So I guess they have the ability to, you know, decide who's there and who's not. I don't know what, if the city's able to do anything like that or if they would.
I mean, it seems like, you know, all these things would be pretty dramatic and then, you know, also impact, you know, the financials for developers who want to build. And there's many things that would have to go. And, and, you know, all the time the clock is ticking.
Sure. And then if you're a developer and you're making a, especially if it's a bigger mixed use kind of development, you probably want an anchor tenant who's maybe not like, you know, a Chinese grocer or, you know, a little cappuccino bar owned by a grandma and grandpa or a barbershop, which might be, you know, the community might love these places, but you want your anchor tenant to be Bank of Montreal or a no-frills grocery or some stable, big corporate tenant, which may not be exactly what the neighbor would like to see replacing, you know, their beloved restaurant that just went out of business.
And that's where this corner at Mackenzie and 33rd really is at. I mean, when I talked to the other tenants and kind of visited their businesses, you know, there are parts of that building that are really falling apart. They've got like duct tape holding it up. And and so you can see from a development point of view, it seems crazy not to be able to develop this into, especially when there is, you know, we're talking about much more intense adding of density into these single family home areas. And certainly, you know, with the election upcoming, you know, that's sort of elongated the state of limbo for this area. It's kind of on hold right now. At the same time, it sort of left the owners not knowing what to do. It's on sale. It was listed and then they've taken it down again because the listing price was...
A little ambitious?
It was a little ambitious. It's being...
What was it? I can't remember.
It's like, $12.8
million. Yeah, so...
Having sold for six a few years ago. But obviously, you know, that 12 is expecting a certain level of density to happen, which, you know, there's a bit of back and forth. But the fact that they are selling it, it's sort of, you know, giving up on the idea that they could develop it.
Or maybe, I mean, because these would-be developers aren't experienced
developers. No, they are new.
Right? They're just some people that thought they'd try their hand at this, kind of?
Yes.
And you said one of them lives in the neighborhood? Yeah.
You know, part of it was that they are, you know, when the neighborhood started to worry about this, there was a lot made about it. It's a numbered company.
Yeah.
And, you know, offshore money from mainland China. The real estate agent that I spoke to, you know, gave me a bit more nuance. You know, one of three shareholders lives in the community. Yeah. But either way, it doesn't change that they would be a new developer and not necessarily, you know, have as many things to trade with City Hall in terms of negotiating. So, but yeah, it's sort of left in a bit of a limbo. You know, if City Hall has, you know, if there's no rezoning application, it's a bit of a signal to the larger development company that we're not sure what the future has in store. Like, who are we, you know, which of the two sides is going to get what they want for this corner?
Yeah.
And that's something, you know, across the city, the same questions, right? You have Benny's Bagels and, and you know, have area being developed for condos and
because everyone agrees we need, well, maybe not everyone agrees, but I think at this point, even compared to a few years ago, it's pretty widely accepted that we need more homes in Vancouver. We need to add, and this would be a way to add a dozen or so new homes in this Mackenzie, I don't know, maybe 10 new homes, something like that. without dramatically changing the feel of the neighborhood. And even the people in the neighborhood aren't objecting to that density. They're just worried that these businesses, once they close so the building, the site can be redeveloped, they're worried they'll never get them back. So on the other hand, maybe I can imagine people in City Hall's planning department saying, you got to break a few eggs to make this density omelet and add these units.
It's hard because, depending on what the land is sold for, then you have to sell the units for a certain price.
Yeah.
And then there's, density that isn't necessarily at a price point that people in the community might be happy about. So it's, that's a whole other conversation. But, but one thing I didn't mention is that City Hall has, as it has with some other sites, said rental housing.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
Rental housing could go here. And that's very similar to what we've seen, with Pavco's tower.
A much taller example.
Much taller example, but saying that
the city was willing to, or council voted to, just for the council voted to allow a residential tower that was significantly higher than the height limit would normally allow. But it was.
So greater density in return for it being mandated for rental housing.
Entirely rental.
Yeah.
Market rental, I think, right?
Mix? Market rental, I think, is the... So I think that that's what the architect and developers have heard. And what the real estate agent, speaking on behalf of the developers, said to me is that, well, that changes the math completely for them.
Yeah.
And in a similar way, it's not what they were expecting.
Yeah.
And looking around, it's a whole new set of numbers. That makes it, so again, this little example, this little corner with a bakery has so much to say that where we're seeing it across in other parts of the city and what City Hall is dealing with.
And are we going to continue to see these kinds of things or?
Well, with the residents in this community said that they were, you don't see it in every community.
Yeah.
It's been rare to see people get together and make noise. And they actually, ironically, they actually said they learned a lot from what they saw in Chinatown.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That, the people who make the loudest amount of noise actually get some attention. So you're not seeing this across the city. It's kind of in spot locations, but that's what happened here.
They obviously had the Mackenzie Heights Association had made their voices heard at City Hall to the right people, but compared with Chinatown before this story, I hadn't really heard much about this. I don't think it was widely covered the way the Chinatown thing was so widely covered,
right?
Like in terms of media coverage,
they did speak to this a little bit. I mean, they it's a community where they residents they were able to lawyers and architects and development folks and so they were really able to access and be articulate. But in that way, even though Chinatown is a more sort of, you could say, voiceless and vulnerable kind of part of town, I think that behind the scenes, Chinatown also similarly had very articulate advocates in the background.
Yes.
And that's some of the stuff that's happening behind the scenes in terms of communities being able to let City Hall know their feelings.
They had, Chinatown would have had high profile, organized, advocates and supporters who don't necessarily live in Chinatown and may never have actually lived in Chinatown, but see its benefit to the
speaking broader, on behalf of its
on
residents.
Behalf of the city, speaking on behalf of its.
Yeah.
Whereas in this case, I imagine for Mackenzie Heights, it may not be necessarily, this particular development may not be a cause that's drawing attention from other people. It's probably the immediate area.
Yes, definitely.
Organizers.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And in fact, one of the residents said to me, well, we do suffer because, the flip side of it is that people are saying, oh, well, who cares about a bakery on the west side?
Yeah.
Except that, these little examples, are ways of, connect kind of the unspoken or unheard conversations that you hear.
Yeah.
You know, like the loss of a Japanese restaurant where, you know, the owners made handmade soba noodles and that's gone. And so you're starting to hear little bits of these and then you have the flashpoints where the voices are louder. And so that's kind of interesting. People connecting those dots.
And did you tried the bread, the baked goods?
I mean, and this is one of the things, like I spoke to a woman who's a regular customer and you know, she went on and on describing like how it's crunchy on the outside and has, you know, has that chew in the middle. And so she said the bread was one thing and she books loaves of bread.
Right.
You know, it's like making a dinner reservation. She books like three country loaves and like one sourdough every week so that she's not disappointed. And again, it's part of that, you know, these are the little things that people appreciate about their, you know, about getting to live in these areas.
Was it good bread?
It was good bread.
It's good
bread. Good grilled cheese sandwich.
And, oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joanne.
Thank you.
For joining us.
Yeah, thanks for taking an interest in the story.
You've been listening to In Depth. Subscribe to this podcast using the links available on theprovincepodcasts.com or search for The Province In Depth in iTunes.